The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Chesam and Aleph, tells us about a very unusual din, which is known as Dina de Bar Mitzvah. To someone who is steeped in American economic thought, it's something of a foreign din. And the Gemara tells us that Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Hayman ta'achzik b'nei achei u'b'nei shutfei chatzifei habe. If you have two brothers who own two pieces of land, and there's a third piece of land in between, and the Gemara is actually talking about a case where the land in between was, in a sense, owned by the Persian government, and the rule was whoever would go pay a certain fee, a certain taxes, so they would be entitled to keep the land. So if someone goes and chops that land in between the two brothers, so it's a chutzpah, because since the two brothers are next to one another, and brothers presumably, we hope, like to live together, so therefore it's not appropriate to interfere. Go buy a piece of land somewhere else and let the brothers, in effect, buy that land. But the Gemara says it's not right. But if someone went ahead and they actually bought that piece of land, so then we would not remove them. We would not force them to give up the land to accept money as payment from one of the brothers. That's what the Rav said. Rav Nachman Amar, Nami Misalkina. We actually, in that case, when you're dealing with two brothers, the benefit is so great of them being neighbors, really directly neighbors, that we will force the other party to sell the land, to give it up to one of the brothers. But Dina de Bar Mitzvah, Lo Misalkina Lay. If it's because of Dina de Bar Mitzvah, if it's on the grounds of Dina de Bar Mitzvah, which is what we're going to talk about, so then Rav Nachman says we don't remove him. And finally, Nehardai Amri Afilim Yishum Dina de Bar Mitzvah Misalkina Lay. Nehardai says that in this case, even just on the grounds of Dina de Bar Mitzvah, which means you have these two fields, the two neighbors next to this, it doesn't have to be that their brothers are connected, but as long as one of them wants to buy the field that's next to their own, so then we will force the person who purchased the field in the middle to sell it to them. The principle behind Dina de Bar Mitzvah effectively is the idea of the sum total of good in the world. It's a very consequentialist approach, perhaps, as opposed to an ontological approach, which says the following. When I have two fields that are separate from one another geographically, when there's a distance in between, it's more expensive to maintain those fields, or to plow them, because you have to hire people who will either two separate teams or people who will travel in between. But if I can buy two fields that are next to one another, then in that case, I have the economic benefit of saving the money on having somebody be able to do it more cheaply to actually work both fields. It saves me time going in between. And assuming that you can buy a field elsewhere, and to you it doesn't make a difference which field you buy, so you're not allowed to buy this field if I want to buy it. I have first rights. It's called Dina de Bar Mitzvah, literally the law of the person who is a neighbor. And so we possibly, like in this case, like Nehardai, that there is Dina de Bar Mitzvah, even in a case where it's a something purchased from the government, the way the Persian government did things. The more standard case that the Gemara will deal with as we go and look at a few of the cases, in general, when I own a field and there's a neighbor to that field, they have the right to purchase that field before someone who isn't actually a neighbor. The principle, the Gemara explains, Nehardai says, is Mishum Shenemar Vasisa Yashar Vato Bein Eshem. Me'ikar Hadin, my field, I sell it to whom I want. Whoever comes first, they buy it. It belongs to them. But because of the Pnim Meshuras Hadin, the halacha is that I have to sell it to the person who is my neighbor. He has first right. And even though ordinarily, Lefnim Meshuras Hadin, we typically do not coerce someone. By definition, it's called Lefnim Meshuras Hadin. If we were to coerce, normally it would be called Din. In this particular case, the Chachamim made a takana that we are kofin on this Lefnim Meshuras Hadin. So the question is, what is the mechanism? How is this conceptually viewed? What is this Dina de Bar Mitzvah? The reason that we've explained really makes sense, but there are multiple ways of looking at this. One way of looking at it, I'd say primarily two, is that this represents the right of the Matzron. The Matzron is the term, the Bar Mitzvah. He's the person who's the neighbor, that he has a fundamental right of purchase. The fact that Beis Din will take it away from the other person is because that was he was entitled to that field. That person has transgressed on his rights. The alternative way to look at it is that the Dina de Bar Mitzvah stems from the obligation of either the lokeach, the other purchaser who sort of swooped in and purchased the field, or of the mocher, the actual owner of the field, who have an obligation of basisa hayashar v'hatov, and essentially Dina de Bar Mitzvah is forcing them to fulfill that obligation. And what the implications, the significant implications of this, particularly if you understand this as being an obligation upon the mocher, which it may not be, is that this fundamentally is a limitation in the rights in my fields. In other words, I think that my field belongs to me. I should be able to dispose of it, do whatever I want with it. But the reality is that it's not true. There are limitations on my property. Now, in reality, there is a limitation I have on my property because I can't sell it to whoever I want. Because at the end of the day, I can sell it to whoever I want. As we'll see, if I sell it to Reuven and Shimon is my neighbor, Shimon can go to Reuven and say, thank you very much for buying for me and take the field. But the real question is, does this really a fundamental right of the Matzron, or is this an obligation of the Lokeach or of the Mokeach? So the Gemara begins by talking about a case, and there's I've taken a selection of cases, but there's an entire daf here of various cases, most of which are part of the Unit of Bar Mitzvah. So the Gemara starts with the following question on the third line. Asa im lachbe. Supposing I'm going to talk about three terms here, the mocher, the lokeach, and the matzron. So the lokeach is the person who bought it but is not entitled to buy it because really the matzron has first rights. So asa im lachbe, if the lokeach comes and consults with the matzron and he says, should I buy the field? Amar le izal isman, he says, should I buy it? But amar le izal isman. And the matzron tells him, yeah, go buy it. In other words, the purchaser, the lokeach, wants to buy the field. He doesn't want to step on the toes of the matzah. And he's saying, is it okay if I go buy it? And the matzah says, sure. So if the matzah is sincere, and if this is effective, then yeah, he's given up his right, and the purchaser has a right to keep the field. The Gemara's question is, does he have to make a kinyan? Does the lokeach have to make a kinyan from the matzah to buy the rights to purchase the field? Ravina Amar lo tzarach lemik yiminei, Nardai Amar tzarach lemik yiminei, v'hilchasa tzarach lemik yiminei. A kinyan is required. If you don't make a kinyan, then the matzron can turn around and say, thank you so much for buying the field for me. Here's the money, whatever it cost, and now I'm going to take the field. So what is exactly the Gemara's question here, whether a kinyan is required? So here there are, I think, two ways of seeing it. One possibility is understanding the Gemara is really asking a conceptual question, which is, does this field actually belong to the Matzron in a sense that he has real rights to purchase? And it is the fact the case, the Gemara continues, it says that if the Lokeach, without the Matzron's agreement, purchases the field, the Matzron just gives him the money that he paid, but it's as if he bought it for the Matzron. So it could be that if you say that the Matzron has rights in the field, that's why you have to make a kinyan in order to acquire from him. Because if he just says, go buy the field, that's like if I don't have you make a kinyan, you cannot acquire my field. So if the matzron has rights in the field, that's why a kinyan might be required. Whereas if you say that it's simply an obligation of the purchaser, the lokeach, to engage in basis hayashar v'atov, to do lefnei mishuras hadin, so then it might be, it's simply enough to get the matzron to say, yeah, I'm fine, you don't have to do it, I'm okay with it. There should be no need for a kinyan. However, you could explain that according to both opinions. That's not that a kinyan is required fundamentally in order to, because the matzron has a right. He actually sort of owns the field, if they become it from him. It could just be that in order to know that the matzron is serious, when he says you can go buy the field, you make a kinyan. Generally speaking, in halacha, we talk about the concept of asmachta. Asmachta is typically defined as the absence of a kinyan, and the reason why asmachta is not binding usually is because we're not sure the person is sincerely committed to something. So one of the ways of getting around, typically the way of getting around asmachta is a kinyan. So perhaps in this case, the purpose of the kinyan is simply to indicate that this person is really, really serious about foregoing his rights of din de bar mitzvah. Okay, so then the Gemara continues. I'm going to skip to the last four lines, and the Gemara states the following. It's near the top of Kufchesam and Beis. Matana less than mishum dina de bar mitzvah. The halach of dina de bar mitzvah only applies if you're talking about a sale. If I sell the land to a lokeach and I didn't give the matzron, didn't have a chance, so in that case the matzron can go to the lokeach and take the field, give him the money. But what if I gave the field as a gift? So it's not a lokeach, technically it's a makabel matana. So the Gemara says there's no din of the bar mitzvah there. Well, why not? Well, it would seem sort of intuitive. If I give the gift to somebody, the other guy's going to say, thank you very much, I'll take the gift. That's ridiculous. But what it means is, actually, that the matzron can't go to the person who received the gift and say the following. I know this person wanted to give you a gift. He gave you a field worth $100. But I'm really entitled to get that field because it's next to my field. So here, I'm going to pay you $100. So you're still getting effectively a gift, but instead of getting a gift of the field, you're getting the gift of the money. So the Gemara says there's no din of the Bar Metzora by Matana. And we'll have to explore why in a moment. The Beis Yosef quotes two reasons that really require some analysis. But in the meantime, the Gemara adds an interesting detail. Amar Ameimar, Kosav le'achrayos ispe mishum din of the Bar Metzora. If in fact, when I give a person a gift, so normally I give a person a gift, it's as is. If something's wrong with the gift, if it's defective, if it's a piece of land and a creditor of mine who has a lien on the land comes and seizes it, the person who received the gift has no taina against me. What is he going to say? I didn't give him a gift. He's not going to be my friend. But it's not as if he undertook any financial obligation to buy the field for me and now that it's costing him. But in generally speaking, when I sell a field to somebody, it's usually assumed I sell it by achrayos, that if something happens to the field, either if it wasn't my field, it's stolen, or if a creditor of mine comes and seizes it, that person, the buyer, can now come back to me and demand payment of one form or another. That usually doesn't apply by matana, but I can give somebody a gift, and I can say, listen, here's the gift, and I want to promise you that I'm going to make good on it. I'm giving you achrayos on this gift, and if this field, and you could give two kinds of achrayos. One is achrayos, what's known as achrayos de gufa, my own achrayos, meaning if this field is not mine, if I stole this field somehow, or it's proven that I stole it, even if I didn't, but I lose the case, that's called achrayos de nafshein. That's my own achrayos. Achrayos de alma means, no, this is my field, whatever the object is, but only a field has a lien on it, in halacha, only a land has a lien. So if somebody, one of my creditors, comes and seizes it, so that's called achrayos ta'alma. So when I give you a gift, I can accept upon myself one or the other or both or neither of those achrayos. So the Gemara doesn't really differentiate, but the Gemara just says that if the Ameimar says in kasav lo achrayos, so then there is, the Adina de Bar Metzvah does apply. In other words, a matana, where there is achrayos, in effect, is not a mecher. And the logic is, I think, pretty straightforward, which is that normally when I give you a matana, I don't accept upon myself the achrayos, because why should I? I'm doing you a favor, something happens, it gets taken by a creditor, okay, easy come, easy go. But if I'm selling you something, you expect me to take upon myself achrayos, because you're paying me money, so you shouldn't be out the money if it's seized by my creditors or wasn't my field. And so, Ameimar is saying that if there's achrayos in the gift, so even though you're not actually paying me cash, the fact that I feel the need to provide achrayos means that, in effect, this is a sale. It's not a sale for money up front, because I'm giving it to you right now, but it must be for something that I did, that you did for me, that you're going to do for me, and therefore, once it has achrayos, it takes on the form of a sale rather than a gift. So before we go, I really want to spend much of the time exploring the question of matana, looking at the Indometzer through the lens of matana, but I just want to finish reading the Gemara, because this, I think, provides one more really very important data point. The Gemara is on the second to last line in the first source. Zvan minachri v'zabein lanachri. If a person sold it, if a person bought it from a non-Jew or sold it to a non-Jew, the Gemara says, les de mishum din de bar metzvah. There's no din of the bar mitzvah here. And here's where it gets, I think, very interesting. Zvan minochri, if you bought it from a non-Jew, so by right you should have let the other fellow, the matzron, buy it from the non-Jew, but you, there's no din of the mitzvah, the amr le ari avrachai lach mi mitzvah. I chased the line away from your boundary. In other words, you had a guy who was next to your boundary. The assumption here is that this guy was, or the average guy, at least in the context of Chazal, was not a friendly person and was a potential source of harm. And therefore, say thank you to me, the fact that I bought this field from him and I didn't let you buy it because I saved you a lot of trouble of having a dangerous name. Okay. Then the Gemara says the following. Zabein l'nachri. If I sell it to a non-Jew, so nachri vaday la bavar sisar sharva tofu. A goy is not bound by lifnei mishur sadin. He's not bound by din bar mitzvah. He's not bound by din drabanan, and therefore there's no claim that the Jew will have against the nachri. Now, what's interesting here is that the Gemara only speaks about basisa yashar batov with respect to the lokeach, not with respect to the mocher. In other words, if I am selling it to you, it's not basisa yashar batov for me to sell it to the matzron. It's basisa yashar batov for the lokeach who would buy it from me to not buy it and instead let the matzron buy it. And the question, because if there were an obligation, upon the seller also of Hasisa Yashar Vatov, then when the Gemara initially said, Zvan Minachri, if you buy it from a non-Jew, the Gemara could have said, Vasisa Vayashar Vatov doesn't apply to a Nachri. At least at first glance, that's what it would seem. So at first glance, it would seem that it must be that the obligation is upon the Lokeach. However, it may be that the Gemara doesn't invoke Vasisa Vayashar Vatov in the first case, but it does in the second, because when you buy it from a guy, let me hold that thought for a moment. So the question remains: why is there no Vasisa Yashar Vatov when it comes to the Mocher? But it seems, at least at first glance, perhaps there's not. We'll come back to this later in a very important machlokas that I want to conclude with. But in the meantime, I want to address the basic question of why is there no dinu bar mitzvah by a matana? And again, I want to stress, it doesn't mean that I give a gift to someone and my neighbor can now say, thank you very much, I'll just take that gift. It means that the neighbor would have to purchase that piece of land that I gave as a gift. He would purchase it from the recipient of the gift. So the recipient of the gift has received money, and now but my neighbor also gets two pieces of land next to one another. The person I gave the gift to can take that money and go buy a piece of land somewhere else, because it's him. It doesn't really make a difference where he has the piece of land if it's not next to his own land. He doesn't benefit in any extra way from it. The Beis Yosef, source number 3, presents effectively really two reasons, and there's two parts in the second reason, but they're more or less, I think, conceptually the same thing, as to why Dina de Bar Mitzvah does not apply by Matana. The first interpretation, he says, Nira li, the time of the Matana less bay Dina de Bar Mitzvah, Mishum de Bishlama Bemecher Omer Hamatran, Kevan Shezer Rotsa Lamochra, Ilule Shekanisa Osa, Hayisiani Kona Osa. The Matran can say to the buyer, to the purchaser, to the Lokeach, listen, he's interested in selling. You should have let me buy it. So you shouldn't have gone and bought it from me, because you didn't give me my opportunity. If the person was giving away a gift, in other words, it's not that I put a for sale sign on my property and then I give it as a gift. I just decided I wanted to give it as a gift to a certain person because I like that person. That person's my friend. The imkain gam below mekabel hamatana lo haya hamatzron zocha. Let's say I didn't give it as a gift to this mekabel. It's not as if the matzron would have gotten it. It would have remained in my possession. So the receiver of the gift, the mekabel matana, by receiving the gift, did not infringe upon any good that would have actually have come to the matzron. So despite the fact that the world might be a better place, if the mekabel of the gift would allow the matzron to purchase it from him, and he would take the cash and go somewhere else with his gift, nonetheless, because the matzron has not infringed upon the right that which would have come ordinarily to the mekabel has not infringed upon the right that would have come to the matzron, there is no din in the bar mitzvah here. It doesn't matter that a greater sum of good could be accomplished otherwise. Then the Beis Yosef offers a different reason. He offers it in two ways, but it's fundamentally the same thing. He says, Inami, Zibimecher lo ichbas lamocher, sheyikneh zeh ozeh. When I sell a piece of land, fundamentally speaking, I don't really care who I sell it to. I sell it to the person who gives the best price, and I should have stated at the outset, the Dina de Bar Mitzvah only applies when the Bar Mitzvah is willing to pay the highest price or equal to the highest price. If someone else is willing to pay more, there is no Dina de Bar Mitzvah. So the Beis Yosef says that by mechira, by sale, the mocher doesn't care. I don't care who buys it. I just want the money. So that's why this din of the mishum hachi is bei din of bar mitzvah. Aval v'matana, when it comes to a gift, rotze hanosein sheis kayim b'yana makabel. I want that person to have this gift, this field, liyoslo l'shem shenasa la'osa matana. I want every time my friend goes out into his field and he strolls there and he does whatever he does in the field, he thinks about me, that I gave him this as a gift. So if, in fact, someone gives him cash and takes the field, he's no longer going to be thinking about me. Which means that, on the one hand, while there might be a benefit to the matzron, that will increase the amount of good in the world from that vantage point, but there's a loss to me as the nosein, because my good, that which I will benefit from, is reduced. And so Dina de Bar Mitzvah, in effect, is only if you're increasing the sum total of good in the world. Because what difference does it make to you who buys a field, or which field you buy? Let the matzvah buy. But here, there is a loss to the mocher, sentimental loss, not an economic loss, which offsets any concerns of Asisei Asher Batov. Because if it would be Asisei Asher Batov to benefit the Matzron, it would come at the expense of the seller, of the giver of the gift. Inami, says the Beis Yosef on the second to last line, HaMekabo Matana Nichol Mei Lios B'yado Sadezo L'shem Shem Me'avodasa HaTova Nisana L'matanazo. Not just for, not necessarily from the vantage point of the giver, the receiver of the gift. Why do you give somebody a gift? Generally speaking, you give somebody a gift because they're friend, they're your friend, they've done nice things for you. So the Beis Yosef says, which is really, again, it's the same as the previous answer, that the net sum good in the world, it's not that it's a total benefit by letting the Matzron take the field and get cash for it. There's a gain to the Matzron, and there's a loss to the Makam Matana, because every time he sees this field, he thinks, oh, my friend, the Chaim Yanko, gave me this field because I was such a good friend. I worked so hard for him. I danced so nicely at his wedding. I was his, I was a great shushpin, whatever it was that I did for him. And I see this field every day. I walk out to it, and I am reminded of our friendship, and it's very meaningful to me, all the good things that I did. So the Choki Hagavna Lech Asiyas Yashar HaTov. In this case, in both of these last two cases, the second answer to Beis Yosef is that Vasisa Yashar HaTov, Din de Bar Mitzvah, cannot apply unless it actually increases the sum total of good in the world. And in this case, the good of the Bar Mitzvah is offset by the good of the Mekabel and Nosei. In the first approach of the Beis Yosef, it's not quite the sum total good in the world will increase if you allow the Bar Mitzvah to give the Matana. If you allow the Bar Mitzvah to give cash to the Mekabel Matana and to take the field, it would increase the good amount of good in the world. But fundamentally speaking, the Bar Mitzvah has no right in that case, because he would never have been able to get the field otherwise. If the Mekabel Matana had it accepted the Matana from the Nosein would have just hung on to the field. In effect, the first approach from the Beis Yosef seems to be that the Bar Mitzvah seems to be a right of the Matzron to buy that field, to acquire that field, to obtain that field. And when that opportunity doesn't exist, it doesn't matter whether it would be better off to let him now purchase the field, the Bar Mitzvah does not apply. But if but in according to the second approach, it's not a question of whether or not he would have been able to buy the field. The reason why Din the Meritzer doesn't apply is because the sum total of good will not be increased in the world. But theoretically, according to the second approach, if for some reason there were no sentimental value, I guess you're dealing with two Vulcans, you know, who are just giving. I don't know why a Vulcan would give a gift, but he gives a gift, and there's no emotional, psychological benefit whatsoever to the two parties. Then perhaps the Matzron would have the right to give cash to the Mekabel Matana to compensate him for the field. The Mekabel Matana could go buy another field, and the Matzron would get the field next to his. So these are that really seems to be at the core of the two basic approaches as to why there's no Din of the Bar Mitzvah by a Matana. Now, going back to one point that I raised earlier, which was the question of what is the nature of the Achrayas. So the Ribi Gash, quoted by the Shita Mekubetzes in Bava Metzia, was asked a very interesting question. Nishal HaRabbi Yosef HaLevi Zal Ibn Migash V'mishenos Ankarka, source for V'mishenos Ankarka L'chaveira V'kibel Al Atzim Al Achrayas D'Nafshe Levad. He accepted upon himself only Achrayas D'Nafshe, meaning if it turns out he's a Gazlan, or it's proven that he's a Gazlan on this field, then he will give the Mekabel Hasada, he will give him another field. But he did not accept upon himself Achrayas D'Alma, meaning if I gave you this field legitimately, it was a legitimate gift, and things happened to work out that I owed money, and at some point the creditor actually came and took this field because at that time I had nothing to pay from, I don't owe you anything. I don't have to replace the gift. So the question was, in Yesh Bazem Mishum Ben HaMeitzar, Hovo Ve'en Lo Alav Zulasi Achrayas Shemischayev Lo B'Matam. That was the question he was asked. Now, the one could ask the question, although I would argue that it wouldn't be true, is what if the reverse were true? What if the Achrayas were only for the creditors, but not if the field turned out not to be? It's not Achrayas D'Nafshe. Now, the Rimi Gash doesn't address that question, but I think based upon what he says, we can. He writes, V'heshiv, ho below kibel al atzmo, kim Achrayas da'osi mecha masei bovai, since he only accepted upon himself the Achrayas of his own, meaning if it wasn't his to give away, lo nidon vo shehum shehu, Mechira, we don't treat it as a sale. V'nichaya ba'adina de bar mitzvah, it's not a sale. Lefisha im hoisa mechira hayu mischayev afilu b'achrayas ta'asei me'alma k'moshe mischayevim b'chol ha'mechiros. You would have obligated yourself, if it were really a sale, without a cash payment for the sale, it would have been like every sale, which is, typically, you accept upon yourself all achrayas. V'hol v'ra'inu shalom ischayevo k'im b'achrayas ta'asei me'achamasei. You only accepted the achrayas of what if the field is stolen, what if it was never mine. It's really just a gift, because if it were a sale, you would have done everything. But you simply strengthened, you gave him a little guarantee, not a real guarantee. A sale would require typically a full guarantee. Here he said, listen, if it turns out it's not mine, I'll give you something else. So the Rimi Gash doesn't really explain sort of the underlying mechanism, or is there a logic to this question of why distinguish between the achrayuses? But I would suggest that, but he simply says that if you accept upon yourself achrayus the atzmo, but not achrayus the alma, that's still called a gift. I would argue that the reverse is not true. The reason I think by a gift why we say achrayus the nafshe doesn't compromise the gift nature of it is the following. I give you a gift. It's easy come, easy go. So you know when you're getting it, I give it to you with all sincerity. But you know that sometimes we have creditors and the field could be taken away. Fine. But if I know when I'm giving you that field, that it's a stolen field, it's not even mine. So I haven't even given you anything. So that's just disgusting. So the guarantee of accepting achrayas nafshe, that if it turns out this field wasn't mine, I'll give you another one. So that's just part of giving a matana. That's natural to giving a matana. The idea of protecting the achrayas to alma fundamentally is that you buy something from me and I'm protecting your purchase. I'm not protecting our relationship. So I would think that if the case for some strange reason were the reverse, that you accept upon yourself achrayas to alma but not achrayas to asimach masei, I would think that actually, even though you didn't accept full achrayas, I wonder whether that would in fact be considered a mechira, not a matana, despite the fact that you didn't accept the full range of achrayas. Okay. So now I want to turn our attention to a major machlokas in the Rishonim, which I think sort of drills down a little bit into trying to understand both the question of matana and maybe more broadly a certain aspect of Dina de Bar Mitzvah, particularly the question of the lokeach versus the mocher in terms of the obligation of Dina de Bar Mitzvah. In other words, assuming it's not a right of the matzron, but rather it's an obligation because asisei asher v'tova, either of the lokeach or mocher, I think this might actually shed some light on the second half of that question. The Gemara in Ksubos speaks about the following case. It's source number 5. Gufa, Amar Rav Nachman, Shnei Shtaros Hayotzim B'zeh Achar Zeh, Bitel Shenius Arishon. Supposing I write a person, I sell them my field. First I give him a Shtar Echa B'Nisan, and then we write another Shtar Echa B'Sivan. And he accepts both. So the halacha is Bitel Shenius Arishon. If the second Shtar has exactly the same rights as the first Shtar, they're identical, the assumption is that something was wrong with the first star, or the second star, for whatever reason, is overriding the first star. Now, what difference does it make? I'm giving you the field or selling you whatever, selling the field. The answer is achrayus. When do you have achrayus against me if the field is, let's say, I sold it to you? What happens if the field is taken by the creditors? And stam mechira assumes achrayus. So if you accept the second star, you forfeit the rights to a lien on any properties that I owned when I gave you the first star, but sold before I gave you the second star. In effect, the date of the sale now becomes the later date, and you only get a lien on the properties I own at that time and potentially forward, but not properties that I had owned at the time of the first star that have subsequently sold. So that if the two stars are essentially identical, you assume the second one overrides the first. But then, Amar HaPapa, Umoder of Nachman, the Eosef Beitikla Letosefes Kasve. Supposing the second star, I write you the same field in a star, I indicate I'm selling to you, but I add something that wasn't from the first one. So Rav Papa says in that case, there's no bittul of first star. Both stars are valid. The shibud on whatever I wrote in the first star is binding from the time of the first star, but I gave you something else. I added one date palm that wasn't included in the first sale that I retained for myself. Now I've added that in the second sale. Then the Gemara says, Pshita, here's the money line. Rishon b'mecher, v'sheni b'matana. Supposing the first star says, I'm selling you this field for $100. And the second star says, I'm giving you this field as a gift. So the Gemara says in that case, Liyapos kokohu de kasevle, mishem dina de marmesra. You don't say bitel sheni is a rishon, because the purpose of the second star, when I give it to the buyer, is to strengthen his hand in any future issues that might come up because of dina de bar mitzvah. Why? Well, without going to, without really probing yet, a sale, when I sell you the land, someone else could come and claim the land as a matzron, and you'd have to give it up, and they pay you for it. If I give you the land as a gift, then it's very possible, then dina de bar mitzvah doesn't apply, and you can say, very nice, but I have the land as a gift. So the question is, what is, Rashi just writes it. If you look at Rashi now in source number 6, Rashi says, Liapos kocho kasve v'inami lo osif be, even if you didn't add a dekel or anything else, lo bitel sarishon, the only reason what you've done this for is, ela delo leisu b'nei matzra ure ala, the kaima la matana lesbe nishon dina dvar matzra. So, as I just explained, so here's the question you have to ask, at least the way Rashi doesn't really explain or doesn't elaborate, is this real? Or is this a hoax? In other words, if I sold you the field and you gave me money for it, so at that point, dina de bar mitzvah applies. So now I turn around, I just write you another shtar, and you say, hocus pocus, dina de bar mitzvah doesn't apply. Is that really what's going on? So Tosos here writes what you might have expected, and a lot of Rishonim echo this. Tosos says, mishum dina de bar mitzvah, and v'yatznia oso shel mecha. No, you have to play games here. The lokeah, who bought the field initially for me, when I give him the second shtar, if a matzron comes up and says, hey, I want to buy that field, I'm a neighbor, you just whip out the shtar matan and say, sorry, buddy, it was a gift from him. My good, dear old friend, we went to high school together, we're old friends, he gave me this as a gift. There's no deal to bar mitzvah buy a gift, there's nothing you can do about it. Because the im yeirai shneim, if both of them become apparent, if they're visible, if we see both stars exist, ispe dina de bar mitzvah, da filu matana shakasa ba'achrayus, ispe dina de bar mitzvah. Forget having a shtar mecher at first. If I have a shtar matana, but as the Gemara said in Bava Metzia, there's achrayus in it. So the Gemara says, Amemar said, shtar matana sheish ba'achrayus is like a mecher. So in this case, I literally have a shtar mecher, not something that's like a shtar mecher, but that has some of the features of a shtar mecher. I literally have a shtar mecher. So if both shtaros were to see the light of day, then it would be pointless. So in effect, the only way it's going to work is if the person who purchased the field initially is going to hide, is going to make the shtar mecher disappear, at least temporarily, which is not actually honest, but nonetheless, that's why the nosein matana, the person who gave the field or sold the field, the reason why he wrote the second shtar is not to be mevatel the first shtar, but rather to allow his friend to play shtar. That's what Tosu says. And there's the whole debate in the Rishonim, whether or not you can be mashbia somebody in this case, you can, you know, if the matzron suspects that they've been playing monkey games, whether or not he can post an oath upon it. The problem in this case problem number one is that it involves karka, and generally speaking, you cannot be obligated someone to take a shvuah karkos. The more interesting thing is the tshuva of the Rivash, which is printed at the bottom of the page. And it's actually not in the passage that's here. It's in the earlier passage. The Gemara says, I didn't put it here, the Gemara says that when a woman purchases a field, there's no din of the bar mitzvah. The reason no din of the bar mitzvah is because at least then it was hard for women to get around and to buy real estate. It was uncomfortable for them. So so the gain that the matzron had in having the field next to his is offset by the loss to the woman who has to go through the uncomfortable process of buying another field. So the shayla of the Rivash was asked and had been dealt with early Rishon and by the Rashba also, is what happens if a husband and wife, what if a wife buys land? So it's not a single woman. A single woman, we would say, there's no din of the bar mitzvah. If she buys a piece of land, the neighbor can't come take it from her. But what if she's a married woman, because her husband can always go, always could pull shtick. But the concern actually that they're talking about here is, it's not whether the woman actually bought it or not. let's say they're playing the again monkey business. The husband knows if he goes and he buys the land, the matzoren's going to come and take it from him. So instead, he has his wife go into it to get around that problem. So one of the issues the Rivash deals with is what if we're not sure? And what the Rivash says is that since the whole din of Dina de Bar Metzra is only lefnim mishuras hadin, it's only because vasisa yashar vatov. Whenever there's not lack of clarity, when it's not absolutely clear what the circumstance is, there is no Dina de Bar Metzra. That's what he says. But the bottom line for Tosfos, and even for the Rivash, I think it ultimately is his maskana, is that if the two shtaros were to see the light of day, then everything's off. Then the first star still stands, because the second star wasn't meant to be mevatel the mecher; it was meant to play monkey, to play games. So we ignore the latter star, and the former star would be a mecher, and the matzoran could come and take it and pay money to the person who actually bought it. That was the position of Tosfos. And the Rashba, echoing this, source number 8, writes, Rishon Mamecha Rishani Vematan Liapos Kofo, the Kosav Lemishum Din the Bar Metzra. Klomar, who Kosav Liapos Kofo, Sheim Ya'arer Allah, if the Bal HaMetzar comes and says, hey, what are you doing on that land? I'm the neighbor I first writes. Yatman Shtar HaMecha, Viyomar Vematan Nasanali, he gave it to me as a gift. You bury the Mecher Shtar and you say it's a gift. Avalim no desha kasav lo shtar achar shemecher yeshba mishon dina de bar metzvah de lagar min matan shah kasav achrayis sheyeshba mishon dina de bar metzvah. So that's Tosfos. But now comes Rav Natro Naigon. He says, Ra'isa tshuva le Rav Natro Naigon zal. Da afal pisha no desha kasav lo shtar achar shemecher. Even though there was another shtar mecher written. We know that. We know the first shtar. The chevan shah kasav lo shtar matana. Ein vo mishum dina de bar metzra. So he says, there's no dina de bar metzra because of the matana. So it's very strange. The one guy pulls out both staros. Here's my mecher, here's my matana, and we say that that overrides the bar metzra. So how can that be? So the Rashba doesn't really explain the conceptual mechanism. I mean, he just tries to explain the textual problem. The problem is that the Gemara Metzia said, a matana sheish bo achrayos does not have dina bar metzra. So in this case, you have a matana from the shtar matana, you have achrayos from the shtar mecher, so why is this different? That was part of that's what Tosfos said. Why is this different than a shtar sheish bo achrayos? So the Rashba kvetches, he says, v'shema nomar l'fi dvara, the shtar matana sheish bo achrayos nechasim shani. Now, you know what the difference is between this case and that case? In that case, there's one shtar which says it's a gift, that might have even been, it really was a gift, he didn't pay money, but it also mentions Achrayas Nechasim. So lefi sheshtar ze be'atzmo nidon kemecher ve'ein kamatan achlal. We only have one shtar that he's given for the transfer purposes, and that shtar itself is not a matana, it's a mecher, because it's a shtar matana shekasav bo achrayas. Aval kasav lo shtar matana muhla. If you happen to write straight up shtar matana, no achrayas in it, it's really a bona fide shtar matana, the way a shtar matana in all the Hebrew, then that case is shani in the fish shtar zeva atzmo nidon kemecher ve'en kan matana. I'm sorry, aval kasav lo shtar muhla. Matana mochlat lahachi kasav leshimi ara lav ben hamatzra shelo yeha mecher v'yiske bo mechamas matana zah v'tzarech iyun. So the Rashba doesn't really explain why. He explains the technical process that you have a shtar matana, which is this regular shtar matana with no games played in it, no achrayas, and there's also was a shtar mecher. But he doesn't explain why can the mocher get around Dina Dvar Metzra simply by deciding, you know what, I'm going to give you a shtar mecher and I'm going to give you a shtar matana, and you now have the right to use it in whichever way you want. The Rashba himself does not explain it. Now, one of the things that I think, this is very difficult, but I think that one really has to, in order to be able to understand this, I think that Rav Natro Naigon is assuming that any obligation of Dina de Bar Metzra fundamentally rests only upon the lokeach. Any v'asisa hayashar v'hatov is focused around the lokeach. You can either explain it because the lokeach has an obligation, v'asisa hayashar v'hatov, or you can explain it because the lokeach, the matzron, has the rights to override the lokeach. Right? He can say to the lokeach, why did you go buy it? You should have let me buy it. If you opt for that approach, then you can say that once the mocher has a kapeda, once he's makpid, that he wants to sell it to one particular person, even though it would be more beneficial, for the matzron to buy it than the lokeach to buy it, it doesn't matter. If the mocher wants to sell his field to X, the mocher has the right. Dina de bar metzer really only applies when the mocher fundamentally doesn't care. I don't care who buys the field. Let this guy, that guy, he sold it to the lokeach. The matron says to the lokeach, why did you buy the field from him? But if the mocher happens to be makbid on who he wants to sell it to, not just give it to, that was what the Beis Yosef spoke about, so then the matron is actually entitled to do, then the mocher, the owner of the field, has the right to do so. It is possible that the basis for Rav Nachshon Nayegon might actually have been in the Gemara that we spoke earlier about the Nachri. Right? The Gemara says that when you sold it to a goy, so you can't. There's no din of the bar metzra because the goy who is the buyer is not included in Vasisa Shabbatov. He's not bound by Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, so we can't force him to turn the field over, to sell the field to the neighbor. But when the Gemara, why didn't the Gemara say when it says that if you buy it from a non-Jew, why didn't the Gemara suggest that that there's an element involved here of the seller has the Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, and since the Nachri is a seller, he is not involved in the Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, that we can't actually force this. Instead, the Gemara came up with the other reason that the Lokeach has done a favor to the Matzron. So it's possible, it's not 100% compelling, that Rav Nachshon Nayegon sees in the fact that the Gemara doesn't cite imply Vasisa Vayashar Vatov to the Mocher, only to the Lokeach, that fundamentally it doesn't apply to the Mocher. And any situation in which the Mocher is makbid for whatever reason to, he wants to give it to a particular person, then there is no din of the bar mitzvah, which is why if he writes a mishtar mecher and he writes a mishtar matana, and you're not playing games here, you don't have to hide the mishtar mecher. The lokeach will pull out both shtaros. You see, here I bought the field. Oh, by the way, you want to vote din of the bar mitzvah? Well, here's my shtar matana, and which indicates that the mocher was makbid on my buying the field. Not that he didn't care, but he wanted me to buy the field. So in that case, so that may be the origin for the position of Rav Nachshon Nayegon. The whole idea of Dina de Bar Metzra, if you look in the way the Rambam presents it in Hilchos Shchenim, so Dina de Bar Metzra is really an offshoot of another sugya. The Rambam first begins by talking about something that's known as Kofen al Midas Adon. It's a very similar din. It's a slightly different case. It's a situation where you have Yorshim, you have heirs to an estate or partners who are splitting things up that would have been somehow they acquired a joint property, and now they've agreed to go their own separate ways. And you have to divide up the properties. So Kofen al Midas Adon is a sugya in the first parak in Baba Basra, where the Gemara talks about under what situations, let's say you're dividing up an estate and you have perfectly equal portions, everything is the same quality, there's no fundamental difference in location, there's no difference in water resources available to two pieces of land, and it's obvious you're going to give one piece of land to one brother and the other piece of land to another brother. So, but it happens to be that one of those brothers owns a piece of land next to one of those two. Now, it's not Dina de Bar Metzra in this case because it's not a purchase here. But the Gemara says in principle, there's a whole debate between Rav and Rav Yosef and what would be reasons to say that it's no Midas Adom here. But the Gemara says that Kofen al Midas Adom, and we will force the division to go one particular way. Dina de Bar Metzra is effectively the same thing. Kofen al Midas, it means that it doesn't make a difference to you which piece of land you get. You could get the land here, you could get the land in the other place. But to the Bar Metzra, it really does make a difference. Now, Midas Adom says, Shali shali v'shalach shalach. What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. My rights and my property are absolute. I get to, if I bought it, it's mine. I had the right to buy it just like you do. Ignoring Rav Nachman Goldin, if I'm the seller, I have the right, I think I have the right to sell to anybody. That's true, but that's Midas Sodom. Midas Sodom means I think I have full possession of my property. The Torah in this week's parasha talks about the halachas of Yovel and the Torah says ha'aretz lo simo cher litzmusus ki li ha'aretz ki gerim v'sel shavim atem imadi, that when you sell a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael b'sman shel Yovel Nohe, so the land goes back in the Yovel and you cannot, you're not allowed to, and it is legally ineffectual to sell a land beyond the period of the Yovel. And the rationale that's offered is Kiliya Aretz, because fundamentally everything we have in this world doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the Ribono Shel Olam, and he's kind enough to let us use it, but he imposes the terms. The concept of Midas Sodom is exactly the opposite of this. The idea of Shali Shali v'Shalach Shalach assumes that God has nothing to say, that God has no ownership in these things. And the halacha, while generally speaking, there are many cases that were not kofin on the Fnim Meshuas Adin. That's actually a major machloket. But there are certain cases where everybody agrees, Chazal instituted a takana to enforce on Midas Sodom. Because fundamentally, the way we look at the world is Kili Ha'aretz. What's interesting is that in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, the Torah says here, Ki Geirim V'Sel Shavim Atam Imadi. The very same phrase appears in Divrei Hayamim when David HaMelech reacts to the overwhelming generosity of the Jewish people in donating to the Beis HaMikdash. And we recite part of this in davening, in Pesukei Dezimra, by Yivarach David. So David uses the same expression. He says he marvels at what God has enabled us to do. He says, God, we're not giving you anything because everything is yours. And he says that we are gerim v'soshavim ala aretz. Same concept, that even though we think that we own the things that we own, and even though in a legal sense that is halachically true, nonetheless, from a hashkafic perspective, a philosophical perspective, we are supposed to look at our assets, our property, as fundamentally belonging to the Ribono Shel Olam, and we obey his instructions in how we engage, how we dispose, how we handle our property, who we sell it to, because fundamentally it really belongs to him. So that is the halacha of Dina de Bar Mitzvah, which, as I said at the beginning, runs very contrary to a certain way of thinking that I think is common in our culture or society, which is this certain type of almost absolute right to private property. And that's something that halacha and the Torah fundamentally not prescribe to, because at our core we believe ha'aretz lo simo cher litzmusus ki li ha'aretz ki girim v'sel shavim atem imadi.